Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, witches. This is Dorian Wallace. For Desperate House Witches, I messed it up again.
I'm just sitting over here waiting.
Okay.
Is it my turn?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. This is Raina Starr. Nice to talk, y'all. Happy second week, third week of my corona. I mean, it's not really my corona because we don't have it. But anyway, welcome to Desperate House Witches. So I will start with the usual disclaimer. If you're new to the show, we're happy to have you. However, Desperate House Witches is not a G, PG, or even an R-rated show. So if dirty talk, bad language, and bodily functions might offend you, plus anything else I might talk about, this would not be the show for you. However, if you're okay with all that, come sit by us, because we got some shit to talk about. Anyway, Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the one, the only, the incredible Dorothy Morrison, Wicked Witch Studios. That's www.wickedwitchstudios.com, where you can get candles and oils and sprays and poppets and mojo jars and gree-gree bags on occasion. You got to watch for
and
those.
And coffee.
And coffee. And all kinds of fantastic stuff from the incredible one herself. And if you need that shipped overseas, check out theangrycauldron.com. They ship Dorothy's stuff internationally, and they have a great line of stuff themselves. Okay, so... All right. First of all, let's talk about. I got some good things to say. It's not all shit. It's not gloom and doom. I'm starting to feel like we're going to pull out of this bitch. I think it's going to be all right. It's going to take time. It's going to take a long time. If you think things are going to go back to the way they were, I got to tell you they're not. But that's not a bad thing necessarily.
Exactly.
You know, we are hyper clingy kind of people. We like to be in each other's spaces. We like to be in each other's spaces. That's okay under certain conditions, but I will tell you that going forward, because this thing subsides, it's not going away. And the fact of the matter is, it may come back even stronger, but hopefully by that time we will already have a vaccination for it. I'm one of the people that does take the flu shot faithfully every year, because the 2 years I didn't get it, I was so fucking wiped out with the flu that I was on my back for 7 to 8 days in a row the last two times that I didn't take it. So I'm pretty faithful about taking the flu shot, because when I don't, I suffer. That's not the case for everybody, and only you and your physician are going to be able to determine what the best practice is for you. But I do think you need to talk to your doctors about it and not just make the decision. Because as we get older, and when I say older, I don't mean old bitch stage like I'm at, you know, almost 60. That's how I think of myself. But I'm talking about, like, you're out of your 20s, you're into your 30s. You're out of your 30s, you're into your 40s. We change over time. I know that's rough to deal with, but mama, that's the way it is. You gotta get with the program. You're not the same at 35 that you were at 25. It's just a fact of life. It doesn't mean anything bad. It just means things change. check with the doctor first. Because I will tell you, when they started talking about this sickness, first it was people over 70 with a condition. Then it was people over 70. Then it was people over 65. Now it's people under 40. So it's different. Every stage is different. You really need to, if you've been an anti-vaxxer, and some folks are, and some folks have reasons that are legitimate, maybe, and some people don't. I land on the get your asses vaccinated because I don't want chicken pox type of girl.
Yeah.
But that's me.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, vaccinate your kids if they're going to be around other kids. If you want to homeschool and not vaccinate, that's fine. That's up to you. But I'm just saying, we fall on the exactly. We fall on the side of let's do things for the greater good, okay?
Yeah.
So let's protect our kids and each other. What a great idea. So that being said, okay. So you understand my position on that. No matter what your age is, no matter how healthy you might think you are, the decision to get a yearly flu shot should be made based on what your advice is from your physician. Okay? So that's that part of it. This is going to take a long time to stop, or at least to start subsiding. It has taken China the better part of 4.5 months for cases to start slowing down. That doesn't mean they've stopped 100%. It doesn't work that way. It means it started to slow down. New York is now in worse shape than China was, than Italy was at the top of the surge. So that should tell you that Americans, being the spoiled bitches that we are, and let's face it, we are, we're not paying attention to what we're being told. Now, I understand this sucks, but I also understand that the government is trying to put some good shit together to help out. Now, I'm not praising Trump. I'm not suddenly a Trump supporter. This was applied with much pressure from all sides, because if you don't have the American people on your side, you will not get to stay in power. It may take time to oust your ass, but you will lose your power. Okay, so people are hurting. The government came together in a very bipartisan way. I'm very happy about that. Folks that have lost their jobs are going to start getting some money. Folks that normally would not be eligible to apply for unemployment will be able to. There are companies that are specifically hiring food service workers because those folks are seriously hurting. So there is some kind of relief coming. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but every day I get a new email about this COVID-19 and a credit card company, a telephone company, whatever company you've ever been associated with, professionally or personally. People understand that what's happening is not the fault of the individual. So that's a good thing. So my feeling about this is we can rebuild society in a much better way than it is right now. I think it can be kinder, it can be gentler, and the funny thing is when no one has any money, the playing field gets very level. So when you take all the money away from poor people, listen, our poor asses already know what it's like to be fucking broke. But when you take the money away from rich people and suddenly everybody's all the same in the same boat, and yes, it did happen in 2008. Trust me, because people that were living in my neighborhood, all of a sudden the people who had lots and lots of money lost their houses and had to move into my building. Just saying.
Yep.
So it does happen. And you remember how, like, I was like, who are all these white people, sis? What the hell are these people? I mean, we're white, but it's weird. Because we had not seen, you know, we like being around everybody, and then all of a sudden the neighborhood got a little white, and we're like, what the hell is this about? But anyway, it's going to be more pronounced now. It's going to be a more level playing field now. And we can make something good out of that. It doesn't have to be us versus them, you know. I mean, I'm not poor by any stretch. I don't have any money, but I'm not poor. I can make my bills, which is pretty important, and I think a success considering I've been poor. You know, when I was pregnant with my older one, I was on welfare and food stamps because I had an abusive spouse who stole all the money, right? Stole all the money. Mine stole it for drugs and, you know, didn't care what kind of notice was. Yeah, you know, so there you go. So we know what poor is like. We know what poor is like. Like, you've been poor a long time. So we've been poor. So we understand what it is to not have shit and wonder where the next meal was coming from, you know.
Yeah.
But through a lot of hard work, we were lucky because we had opportunities for various reasons. And now we're okay. You know, we're not rich, but we're okay. So I think it's interesting when you see people in large groups, and you're always going to have these people that are, they go to the lizard brain immediately, and their main thing is me and mine and fuck everyone else. And when we went food shopping, last Saturday, you know, every weekend we've been queuing up at the grocery store at like between 6 and 7 a.m. just for toilet paper, which I didn't even fucking need. But when you see this mob mentality, it's like almost that lizard brain can really take over and say, well, you better go get it too, just in case.
Yeah.
I don't need it. So, you know, it's like I have to train my brain to say, no, no, no. Stop thinking like a fucking lemming. Get what you need, not what you think you might need because someone else wants it. There's a lot of that. There's a whole lot of that. So I'm, you know, we're purposely not leaving the house this weekend to go food shopping because we don't need to queue up at 6 a.m. for a fucking 4-pack of ass wipe. We just don't. We don't need it. So we're going to leave our share for other people to go and get.
Yeah.
And we're going to Instacart, which I learned about from you. We're going to have, we're going to do that. We're going to have Harris Teeter do their express lane thing and deliver. And I know neither of these, but these things aren't going to have toilet paper. And, you know, I'm training my brain that that's going to be fine. You know, my ass ain't that nasty. I know how to bathe. You know what I mean? Seriously.
Yeah.
When you have enough toilet paper for 2 weeks at a time, just for your individual self, I think you're okay and you can let someone else get some. Just saying.
Exactly. Especially after the first wave, if you have enough to get you through that first wave of panic buying like we had, I believe it was the week we were moving. People started panic buying, and it was like, I checked to see how much we had. We have enough for like 3 weeks. So I was like, no. By the time that the second wave, people who really need it have gotten theirs, it will be restocked by the time that we need ours. So
I'm hoping so. Yeah. There are some companies, I will tell you, your brand, your favorite brand may not be available for quite some time because there are companies that are not shipping more. But that's not the majority. There's, like, I'll give you an example. You know those corn chips and, let me see, it rhymes with miso haze?
Corn chips?
Okay. That brand has shut down.
Oh, you're kidding.
I have been informed that the hot fries are not coming because they have stopped operations for the time being. Now, I don't know where they're based out of. I don't know if it's a California situation where they're just like rolling up the streets and saying, no, bye-bye. We ain't doing shit. Because I've got vendors in California, I've got vendors in Pennsylvania, I've got vendors in Canada, and Indonesia, and I mean I'm international and I'm essential services. So I'm extremely blessed because I actually still am working. But there's a lot of people who are not. But anyway, the point was the level of humanity that I got to see last week in spite of the toilet paper grab was amazing. People were kind. People were helpful. You know, my spouse gave up a package of toilet paper to a guy who was upset because he was all the way in the back of the line and he was afraid he wasn't going to make it in time to get any paper, and he was upset. And my husband said, well, I grabbed two of these by accident. You want one? And the guy was like,
aww,
really? I mean, it was like winning a lottery ticket. 10 minutes later, my husband is looking. I told my husband I have to have Tylenol because I have certain conditions and I can't just take anything. And he's looking all over and he can't find the Tylenol. And this woman comes up to him and says, what's the matter? And he's like, I'm looking for Tylenol for my wife and I can't find it. And she was like, okay. And she ran off and he's still looking. She comes back and finds him and says, here's the generic, a huge bottle of acetaminophen. And he looks at her and he's like, that was, so, I can't believe you did that. That was so kind. And she said, I saw you give that man your toilet paper. So we made it. So I didn't know. I know. And I knew nothing about this. I'm busy off buying my own shit. We meet up at the line. He's in a conversation with the woman who's standing in front of us. And she looks in my cart and she says, you found toilet paper. And I said, yeah, but I was only going to get one because I didn't realize he was going to buy one. I said, do you want one? And she said, really? And I said, yeah, go ahead, take it. Take it. It's okay. No problem.
Aww.
I just didn't want to make a big deal because I didn't want people to like be crowding around making a fuss, you know. So she grabs it and she says to me, I want you to know this isn't for me. And I said, really? And she says, yeah, I'm taking care of this couple that are moving to Winston-Salem. He's getting a bone marrow transplant, and I know they're out of toilet paper. And I know, and I started to cry, of course, and so did she. And I was like, we really can rebuild the world, can't we? And she was like, this is how we're going to do it. So there are moments of extreme kindness, and it restores my faith that people are basically good.
For the most part.
Thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, people will really be there for each other if you give them the chance. People want to do the right thing. People want that good feeling of I did something good for someone, because it serves the giver as much as it does the recipient. Because, you know, I felt pretty good about life when we left, and she was happy because she could take care of her friends, which I thought was a fucking noble thing to begin with. You know, I mean, wow, we made somebody's life a little bit easier by not being selfish. That was all it took.
Yeah.
Just seeing that somebody needed something. It was great.
And that makes me so happy to know that, you know, my sister and my brother-in-law are such kind people, too. Yeah.
Well, I don't want people to suffer. It sucks. Because when you're suffering, it fucks up my happiness. This is what I learned from Lon Milo Duquette. If you're not happy, it's fucking with my happiness. Therefore, my laziness insists that you are happy so that I don't have to suffer because you're not happy. Because if you're happy, I'm happy. We're all happy. You know?
There you go.
So it was simple. It's a simple thing. I learned it from him. He's amazing. He's been doing some live stuff on Facebook. Lon Milo Duquette.
Cool.
Brilliant man. He's brilliant. I'm serious. I love him to death.
If you guys haven't listened. I'm sorry.
If you guys
haven't listened to his episode, it was just a couple weeks back, if I'm not mistaken. I think like 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
maybe a little more. I can't keep up. You know, here's the thing. Since this virus shit started, I cannot keep track of a goddamn thing. To me, every day is 12 to 30 hours long. I can't remember what happened. I can't almost not remember. Let me try that again. I almost can't remember life before this shit happened, because the shit's been in the back of my mind for, and I'm not saying I'm, I hate the way this fucking sounds. Okay, so I've had since October this feeling of dread, had no idea what it was. You know, Byron Ballard talks about Tower Times. It was really starting to hit me in October. We moved, fortunately, in October. I couldn't figure out what was bothering me. I couldn't figure out this doom and gloom around me. I couldn't be happy no matter what the hell was going on. And then all of a sudden this shit happens. And now I'm, and here's what's weird. Now that I know what the doom and gloom was about, I feel better, because now I feel like, okay, I'm not going insane. It was a real thing. This is the real thing. I didn't foretell it. I'm not claiming any of that shit. I'm just telling you, I had a really bad feeling for months and months, didn't know what it was. This is it. And I know this is it because I'm starting to feel better just from the fact that I can now say, oh, this is the bad thing that I've been waiting for subconsciously. Now, once we get past this, I'll probably be able to appreciate the fact that I live in a really friggin' phenomenal place right now, and I'm really lucky, because it was all magic. It had nothing to do with me, nothing to do with my talent. This was just energy that a lot of my friends put in for me, and it just worked out. So I'm really grateful. Magic works. Just go with that. Anyway.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I'm really just saying that I think we're going to get through it. It's sucky. I unfortunately stand to lose two family members. Two of my three remaining family members that are alive, which is fucked up because they're both elderly and in New York and very sick, not with the COVID-19, but elderly and sick. Like, my mother had a stroke. She's been homeridden, but she's pretty safe right now because she has someone who comes in and takes care of her. It's the same person every single day, and there's a protocol, yada, yada. But the bitch is going to be 80 next month. You hear me? And the other one is my beloved aunt, who is 77, and a month ago, out of the blue, had to go on dialysis. One kidney is gone, and half of the other kidney is gone, and she's been on dialysis 3 days a week for over a month now. And what sucks is I can't get up there. I can't leave here because I would need permission to leave my state, not only from the government at this point because they just instituted the shutdown as of this coming Monday, for the state, but my employer would have to approve my travel, and no one is going to approve my going to New York, and New York will not let me in because I would be putting my family members at risk because I'm the state that had, because now every state has the COVID-19. It's too dangerous. So it is what it is. It's out of my hands. Trust me, I've cried a ton over it, and I just have to deal with things the way they are, and it sucks. But, you know, there's people, believe it or not, with worse problems than mine, you know, barring losing family members. I'm pretty fucking lucky. So tonight we are going to be talking to, okay, listen, I know I'm a gushy girl, but oh my gosh, Keldon is the amazing writer of The Crooked Path, An Introduction to Traditional Witchcraft. Oh, my God, he's so cute. And he's so sweet. And I'm crazy about him. He's just the nicest person. I love nice people because I can be such a cranky old witch. But he's awesome. and just I can't wait to talk to him, and I think you're going to really like him. In addition to writing this book, he writes for Pathos, Pagan, of course, and he's got a blog on the channel by Athame and Stang, and that's cool, and I think you're going to love him.
Well, he is actually in the queue if you would like to bring him on.
I would love to bring him on.
Okay.
I would love to.
Let me get him on here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming
on. Thank you for being here.
You are, I just have to say, honey, you're a little slice of heaven. I'm just going to tell you.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
I'm a dirty old lady, but I am extremely safe, I promise.
Okay, I believe you.
True enough. Okay, so I, first of all, the book is gorgeous. The cover is like, for folks who have not seen the cover of this book, it's so beautifully done. I really love it. It's like a painting. I wish I had a copy of it as a painting. But I'm going to ask you something very typical.
Okay.
Why did you write this book now?
That's a great question. So I never, like, I guess I didn't really think that I was going to write a book anytime in the kind of immediate future. I love writing, and writing for Pathos has been really wonderful. I guess it was probably 2 summers ago now, our wonderful channel editor, Jason Mankey, messaged me, and he was like, you know, when are you going to write a book? Like, I've written books. Thorne Mooney has written books. Like
yeah.
It's your turn now. And I was like, oh, that's funny. But then I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like, well, what would I write about? And I was like, well, of course I'd write about traditional witchcraft. And then a table of contents popped into my mind, and I was like, okay, that would be my table of contents. And then what would I put in each chapter, and how would I, you know, how would I flesh it out? And one of the things in my writing, especially on Pathos, has been kind of filling a void in the writings on traditional witchcraft. I think that, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of books written about traditional witchcraft in comparison to, like, the number of books written about Wicca. I think that that dramatically changed in the last, like, 10 years. But even so, there's not necessarily the same breadth of information, and I think that there's a lot of need right now for different perspectives. And if I'm being honest, I find that a lot of the materials that have been written sometimes don't do the best job at writing about what traditional witchcraft is without bashing on Wicca. I think some of that's a product of its time when these books were first being written. I mean, Wicca's been the front and center of witchcraft since its modern revival. And so a lot of times when you tell people you're a witch, if they're not like, oh, God, what? They're like, oh, so you're Wiccan. And so I think a lot of these early writers had to go out of their way to differentiate between the two. But I think it came out in a way that feels really kind of downgrading or degrading of that. And I think that's unfortunate because I think it really detracts from the subject material and the author's credibility. So I wanted to write a book that handles that kind of comparison and how the two relate in a respectful manner. But then there's also a lot of books on traditional witchcraft that can kind of can kind of be pretentious, using a lot mm-hmm. of very, like, overcomplicated language. And I wanted to write a book that also cuts away from that, because if there's one thing that I really believe is that traditional witchcraft is meant to be very practical and down to earth. And so really I wanted to write the book that would have been helpful for me as a beginner.
Yeah. And what I find interesting about that is, I mean, I'm gardenerian, so, you know, I get looked at like I'm the GOP. I think Devin Hunter said it to me that I was like considered the GOP of paganism because I was very traditional. Well, I mean, I know what he meant by that. He wasn't accusing me of being that. I think it was more about this is what happens to folks of a certain path of a certain age where it becomes a very okay boomer, you must be a member of the GOP. I mean, he wasn't accusing me of that, but I understand the gist. Like, oh, you're one of the old-fashioned ones as opposed to, oh, you're gardenerian, that's cool. You know, because, and Thorne Mooney will tell you, as a fellow gardenerian, gardenerians can be assholes. It is very true. I know, I'm an asshole, but everybody's an asshole in my opinion, so I run with that. Anyway, but what I liked that I found interesting, I have always thought of Wicca as being traditional witchcraft, but you differentiate the two. Can you explain to the audience how you do that?
Very delicately.
With a surgical knife.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting that you bring up the fact that for you, you consider Wicca to be traditional witchcraft. And I think that you're right. So how I tend to look at it as is almost as a tree. So I think of Wicca as a very specific type of witchcraft. And so I think when I view it in my mind, I see this tree with two kind of trunks jutting out of the same base. And one of those is Wicca, and the other is everything else. And that's traditional witchcraft. But both are drawing from the same roots, specifically kind of thinking about ceremonial magic and folk magic. And I see Wicca as kind of taking more of the ceremonial direction and traditional witchcraft taking more of the folk magic direction. But there's elements of both in each. They're two sides of the same coin. Now, in the book, I talk about the historical development of traditional witchcraft. And one of the really important things and where that line between them really blurs is that, for example, Gardner, we know that Gerald Gardner received this fragmented material from the New Forest Coven. And upon that material, he brought in pieces from ceremonial magic and from folk magic and created his system that we know today as Wicca. So he's pulling from those roots. But those are also the same roots that traditional witches are pulling from. He worked extensively with Cecil Williamson, who was very much into more of the folk magic, kind of wayside witch ways. And then even Doreen Valiente, when she gets involved, she kind of brings her own interest in folklore into Wicca. But then also then later when she left Gardner's Coven and joined up with Robert Cochran, who we kind of see as being one of the like pioneers of traditional witchcraft, if you will, she brought some of that. She brought some of that Wiccan influence into his group, and so we see all of this. I mean, I guess for lack of better words, cross contamination. and
or
so
pollination.
I think that it's hard to draw fast and hard lines between the two because I very much see them as two sides of the same coin. But I think in the broadest terms, And when I make that differentiation, usually what I am keeping in mind too is kind of that more traditional initiatory Wicca. And that has, to my understanding and knowledge, has very specific rituals to it, materials and liturgy. And in that sense, there is a differentiation between what you might be doing in an initiatory coven versus what maybe a traditional witch is doing. But I think it's always dangerous to draw hard and fast rules and generalizations about what all Wiccans or all traditional witches do.
Right, right. No, I think you just did a beautiful job of explaining that. That was well done.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I'm impressed. That was very gently, concisely, and thoughtfully done. So right on.
Thank you.
I don't think anyone. Now, see, here's the thing. People are in their feelings, especially now, it seems, and it's an art form to be able to show differences without punishing somebody for being different. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So it's, like I said, it's an art form. Well done. Nice. I liked it. Something else you do that I find very interesting is your reference to witch mother and witch father. When I'm standing in front of my altar, it's great mother and great father. But I'm interested as to how you got to witch mother and witch father, because I don't know why that just doesn't fall off my tongue easier, because that would make so much sense to me too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I like the fact that you use, you know, like the terminology you're using is a vessel for all of the faces of the mother, all of the faces mm-hmm. of the father, which is lovely, which is something that I always wondered, because I do that. I sometimes wonder, how am I going to get judged when I tell people that?
Mm-hmm.
But I like that you do it too.
I guess like a little context on that is that I'm kind of one of those weird people who like falls in between like soft and hard polytheism in the sense that like for me, I view all spirits, including deities, as kind of pieces of a collective whole, but also all of those spirits are at the same time autonomous beings. So
yeah.
It's one of those things where I've kind of made peace that like maybe that doesn't make a whole ton of sense, but that's just part of being a mystery. And so I view the witch father and witch mother as really like archetypes. They're placeholder names for a grouping of different spirits. Now, one thing that's been brought up to me is, you know, kind of the gendering of those, that, you know, maybe for some people that doesn't really feel comfortable, and that's okay. I hope if I've made anything clear in my book, it's that traditional witchcraft is about what has meaning and what fits for you, and if that's something that doesn't fit for you, that's not something you need to include in your craft.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is something I include in my craft. And one thing that I think differentiates the witch mother and witch father a little bit from, like, say, the Lord and Lady in Wicca is that they're not necessarily partners.
Right.
In my experience, I don't see them as being like a romantic or like sexual couple. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
The term father and mother for me come more from the fact that they're primordial. They are the beings from which everything comes.
Yeah.
And so that's where I pull in the terms mother and father. Because
right.
they are creators. So that's, I mean, that's just a quick answer on that. I could go on forever about them.
But see, and I think, but here's the thing. I find that folks are very sensitive, and I understand that. But when it comes to, like, how I was born and who I look to for comfort, it's going to be, I mean, obviously it's not going to be my temporal parents. It's going to be my spiritual parents. And, you know, at the moment, that's how we get birthed. You know, we need this part, we need this part, and that's how you make parents. And maybe that's old-fashioned on my part, but that's, I always go to, you know, who do we always go to for comfort? Someone who loves us unconditionally, somebody who understands, you know, we may not say and do the right thing, but they love us anyway. And that's always someone usually who has part of your biology, you know. So I think it's a beautiful traditional thing, and it makes me very sad when people get a bit judgy about it because it doesn't, it's, you know, it, yes, it sounds very heteronormative. I get that, but that's kind of how kids are born. So, yeah. I mean, well, I don't know what else to say about that.
And I guess another thing I'll say about that is that, you know, there is an element of it being very heteronormative, but I don't think that because it's gendered and heteronormative that it negates expressions of spirits that are not heteronormative or not cisgendered. And my experience with spirits is that they will be whoever the fuck they want to be. And the second you try to define them in hard, like, boxes, they will pull the rug out from under you and say, nope, I am whatever I want to be. And so just because it's witch mother and witch father doesn't mean that there's times where they are going to appear in ways that are expressed as the opposite gender or no gender at all.
Yeah.
Interesting. I like that. I had not thought of that. See, I don't think people think of that, though. I think folks are so sensitive that they're really ready to attack without consideration. So I find that, I mean, I find that a little bit distressing. It's like, you know, I'm bisexual. I'm very open about it. Everyone who knows me knows I am. I make no bones about it. But it doesn't bother me to fall into all the roles. And that's kind of how I look at it. So I kind of figure everyone looks at it that way, but they don't. And it's like, I'm trying to be sensitive here, but because you're looking at me thinking one thing and I'm thinking something totally different, and I think it fits for everybody, but okay.
Well, I think it's really hard for people because for a lot of people, they're not feeling represented or seen or validated. And I think sometimes that ends up coming out in ways that are maybe like angry or irritable or feels like they're attacking. And that sucks because, you know, that kind of shuts everybody down. But
yeah.
Ultimately, I think it's coming from a place of just really wanting to be seen and belong. And so, again, just to touch back on the fact that, you know, like if you're somebody who feels like the concept of the witch mother and witch father is really, you know, gendered and doesn't feel right to you, don't use it. Traditional witchcraft is about connecting with the spirit that really speaks to you. Because otherwise, it's not as authentic and powerful.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And go ahead, sis. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, it's like, you know, I was trying to look for a good example, but, like, you know, trying to learn a language that you're not really into. You know, if you don't connect, it's not going to work. You're not going to pick it up. It's going to make it twice as hard. So, yeah, I totally understand.
Mm. I agree. I mean, people, I get the whole thing. People want to be, you know, acknowledged and heard and accepted, but sometimes people need to be the example themselves. And there is nothing wrong with being a God in your own right and making, you know, built a tradition on, you know, because there's so many now. I mean, there's things I didn't even know existed, because back in my day, there weren't a whole lot of books. You know, we had Sybil Leek, we had Doreen, we had Gerald, we had Raymond, we had, but it's limited. You know, we had a handful, and it wasn't on the internet. You had to go find it in a library or in a bookstore, and it wasn't hard. It wasn't easy to get. So a lot of, you know, a lot of the folks who are older who are practicing today basically had six people as a point of reference, and that was it. And we were subject to what they taught us. So, you know, now, all these years later, we have, you know, all these different takes on a lot of the same thing, and they're all valid, and it's really cool, because I do feel that witchcraft has become more inclusive. Note I didn't say Wicca. I did say witchcraft specifically and on purpose, because I understand, you know, when... You know, in back in the 70s, it was all about, you know, we're going to practice magic and we're going to have sex. It was going to be cool. I mean, not me, but my elders did. But you know what I mean? And it was like, that's all we knew. That's what they were taught. That's what we learned from them. And, you know, over time, when you know better, you do better. And thanks to you and writers like you, there is a, you know, there are new ways of being and thinking, and it's pretty awesome, because as many of these traditional books that I read, and I read a lot of them because we have a lot of guests, and but they're all different. It's not like, I don't feel like I'm reading the same thing over again. Like, your information and your take on it is different from Thorne's. And the exercises you have in your book are different from the exercises that Devin Hunter has in his book, which I love. You know what I mean? So everybody's got this beautiful perspective, and I worry that people get very, not offensive, but, well, it's my way, your way is wrong. Because I've learned, like, the more you do that, the more you resist the other ideas that are out there, the more you have limited yourself. Because I think, you know, I think straight people should appreciate and understand trans people. And I think, you know, like, straight people should appreciate gay people. And I think gay people should appreciate bisexual people. I mean, it's all, you know what I'm saying? I think everybody kind of needs to meld together to a certain extent and stop fighting. And the fighting kind of makes me crazy, because we already have a lot of the world against us just by not being Judeo-Christian. So my thing is, let's you know, come down off that high horse and try to blend and unify. I'm not saying we all have to believe the same thing, obviously, but it's a much better world when we say, you know, Kelvin's ideas are as good, you know, as valid as this one, or Christopher or Thorne or whomever, you know, and just have it all be groovy and not say, well, this one says this, therefore they're right and everything else is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you experience any of that, or do you find you get pushback from people?
I've had pushback from people, which, again, I think it's fine. I'm always open to people's feedback and things like that. One thing that I've found, not just for myself but for other authors as well, is there's this kind of unfortunate trend of people who read a book, find that its contents don't 100% reflect their exact thoughts and beliefs, and then they write it off as being a bad book.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's sad because no book is ever going to 100% reflect your experiences and your thoughts. I mean, maybe it will, but I think more often than not, it's not going to. And there might be things in a book that you disagree with, and there might be things in that same book that really speak to you. And I think it also takes an understanding that a book is written influenced by the author's experience. So, like,
exactly.
My book is influenced by my experiences and my craft. And therefore, you know, it's going to differ from somebody else writing about traditional witchcraft. So sometimes I find that people read it and they go, oh my gosh, like, this is not what I do. This is not what I believe. This book is garbage. And I think that that's really sad because we're no longer appreciating differences and understanding that we all practice different, and that's great. We're just kind of like, right, in this place where we're not open to that. And I think, you know, some of the fun, you know, there's been funny moments of pushback from people where they've made comments about the book, you know, and it's always things like, you know, either this book is too dark or this book is not dark enough. So I think that's pretty funny. And, you know, it's never going to be everybody's cup of tea, and that's fine.
Too dark? Are you serious? Too not dark? And what does that even mean at this point?
Well, I think it comes down to, you know, and this is kind of one of those things that gets into the idea of the tension that has been present between, like, Wicca and traditional witchcraft pretty much from the get-go, is that, I mean, really it's a pissing contest over who's more authentic and who's got the real power, which is just garbage, because as long as you're doing magic that speaks to you and you're getting results, like, then you're authentic. But if you have to sit there and get into, like, you know, battles over the internet and make, you know, bullshit memes about each other, and, like, then you're not authentic. But there's a lot on, like, the idea of, like, cursing and hexing and how, like, you know, those fluffy, funny Wiccan don't do that because the Wiccan read. And I'm like, read a history book, babe. Like, you know, look into the history of Wicca's beginning. Like, there's a lot of that going on. You know, this idea that traditional witchcraft is really spooky and dark and Wicca is witchcraft without teeth. And I think it's all just based on stereotypes and misunderstanding of the different paths. But some people look at this book and they go, oh, like, hexing, like, that's icky, like, don't do that. Which, again, it's fine. If you don't feel comfortable hexing people or that goes against your personal moral code, don't do it. But also don't hate on people who do or try to, like, correct them. At the same time,
you're so much nicer than I am. I've got very little fucking patience. See, you're so nice, and I guess there's a certain amount of diplomacy that comes with writing a book that I just don't fucking have. My feeling is, when you read a book, if you decide that it doesn't line up with what you believe and you're mad about it, then you're just fucking lazy. Because quite frankly, if you find a book that agrees with you 110%, you're following one person and one person only. You don't believe anything else. You don't think for yourself, obviously. And I have a problem with all of that. The fact of the matter is that if you are done looking, you are probably done living. And if you're going to deny everything that doesn't agree with you, you're done looking. So as far as I'm concerned, anybody who is like looking for something that lines, listen, if you're looking for something that lines up exactly with what you already believe, write the book yourself. Don't look to other people to validate you. Isn't that missing the point? I mean, you see what I'm saying? The whole reason to read is to learn something you don't friggin' know. Call me crazy, and I know you might. I'm just saying, you've got great spells in here. I love it. It's great. You know, you talk about things that other people don't talk about. You know, again, I had never heard the terms witch mother and witch father. I think that's awesome. It's not that much different from the way I use great mother and great father. It's just what I've been using. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It doesn't mean which father or which mother is right or wrong. It's what we use. We use what we like, you know. I think it's great. I like the way you explain things. I like the fact that you actually have exercises in the book. You know what I mean? And you talk about, like, the basic questions of, you know, what do you do for an offering? Or, you know, is baneful magic okay? You know, what do I do when I want to contact the other world? You know, do I need to protect myself? There's a lot of books that talk about, you know, how to get started on the path, but they don't address this stuff. And there's nothing wrong with not addressing it, but you do, and that's, you know, part of what makes your book cool and different. I just wish people would get off their own horses already. I get annoyed. Can you tell?
Kind words.
They're not kind. I'm not a kind person. See, here's the thing. I'm sick of people's bullshit is what it is. And when I find something refreshing and authentic, I like to talk about it. You know, and your book is refreshing and authentic, and it's not a copy of somebody else. And that, I think, is what I'm having a problem with in the community sometimes. When I feel like I'm seeing carbon copies of things, and it's like, wait a minute, that's verbatim in this other book over here. And it's not that people haven't had the same thought, you know, ever. But you can tell when somebody has listened to one person and one person only. And that person already wrote that book. What are you doing with your life? You know what I mean? I get resentful that I spent money on something that I actually know who the original author is. That's where I have an issue. You know? But the book is beautiful. It's a lovely book. It's another approach, and it's to be celebrated. You really, like, how long did it take you to write this, if I can ask?
It took me about a year.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's not very long. You know, I mean, I like the fact that you don't punish people who don't do it one way or another. You know, it's like, There's back in the day, it was like, this is how you do it, this is how it's done, and you don't veer from the path. And it's not because, you know, here we go, it's not because Wiccans are necessarily assholes. Listen, I'm Wiccan, I'm Gardnerian, I know all of the stereotypes about my folks, I get it, but we're not all like that, and there's a reason why we appear to be that way. You know, we don't keep a bunch of secrets. That's a fucking myth. There are groups of people who are assholes in every fucking sector.
Oh, of course.
We get a lot of it, that's all. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, I completely appreciate all the different traditions that I'm learning about, fairy tradition and, you know, Black Thorn tradition, Black Rose tradition. I mean, there's so many beautiful things and beautiful different ways to be a witch. And, you know, learning to celebrate all of them You don't have to practice all of them, but don't discount them just because they're not what you're doing. That's my objection. My objection is the narrow-minded shit, because people hurt each other when they get stuck in something like that, and it gets hateful. And then people don't talk to each other, and then you hear this bullshit about witch wars, which is, you know, it's the witchcraft version of high school, don't talk to my boyfriend. You know what I mean? And it's
mean girls.
It's mean girls. It's mean witches. I hate mean witches. They're horrible. Stop it.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Be nice.
You know, so
not me, them, but
I mean, you address a lot of different things. You know, you talk about charms and folklore and spellcraft. See, I love the term spellcraft. I haven't heard that term.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever heard that term, but I like it, because
it's not just
about write down some words, repeat these words. It is crafting. It is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I explain this? It takes work and thought and research to properly craft a spell.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I like the
I mean, to kind of jump back to what you were just saying is like, well, one, I think it would be incredibly boring if we all practiced the same way. But one of the biggest, I think, misconceptions about traditional witchcraft is that it represents like one unified ancient tradition. And I think a lot of that just comes from the term itself, which is not always most helpful. Like, what the fuck does traditional witchcraft even mean?
Right.
Is the question I always like to ask. Because I think we have a lot of preconceived notions about what it means to be traditional. And a lot of that is this idea that it's something that's unbroken and unchanged over time, and that it's really, really old. And I don't think either of those things are necessarily true. For me, when I think of the term traditional witchcraft, the traditional part of that is referring to the fact that it's a path of witchcraft that's influenced by folklore and history and the traditions that are presented in those spaces, but that are also brought into a modern context, because we know that like traditions, if they don't apply, if they don't have meaning to people in our modern time, they die out because they're just not applicable anymore. So, you know, like things that people may have been doing in the past in terms of like magical practice, like maybe some of it applies to our modern age, but maybe some of it doesn't. So we have to find a way of bringing it, adjusting it, and reforming it to fit our lives. And with spellcraft, in traditional witchcraft, we use a lot of folk magic. And there's tons of examples of folk magic from all over the world and from different cultures. And we can utilize those practices and find ways of incorporating them today. And I think that's kind of where especially the craft comes from, is because you're right, we do have to be thoughtful and mindful about how can we use this thing from the past. But the other thing, and you know, maybe this is kind of going into even more of a tangent, but with witchcraft, and traditional witchcraft drawing from the same root, is that we're drawing from what I call the narrative of witchcraft. It's this free-flowing, living entity, and that encapsulates all the different folklore about witches and magic that exists throughout time. It's added to throughout the years and the centuries. You know, I talk a lot in the book about the witch trials. That's a place that generated a lot of folklore about witchcraft. It took added those, but then it also generated further folk beliefs. And I don't think a lot of people today really understand that a lot of our kind of, some of our very core beliefs come from those witch trials, like the ideas of coven and Sabbath meetings have precedent in trial confessions. The idea that there's 13 witches in a coven, the idea that we meet on the quarter days of the year, those are all things that are coming from this folklore generated during the witch trials. So I guess to sum that up, it's just that we have a lot of differences, but we also, again, are pulling from similar places. And I think that that's awesome. And I think it's awesome that we've all branched out in different ways.
I agree.
Yeah.
To go back to what we were talking about before, you know, if everybody was reading one book and we all agreed, we'd be fucking Christians because that's what they do. They have one fucking book. All these bitches agree that that shit happened, even though we fucking know it didn't. Not the way it's written. And, yeah, you know, we're not that, you know, so stop trying to homogenize. Listen, there's a difference between homogenization and acceptance. All I'm saying is you got to respect and accept. That's fine. It doesn't mean you have to become the same as anybody else. But you do have to show some respect because there's more than one way, you know. And I think that's really the point. You know, it's good to have other opinions other than your own. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's been a rough week. I've had people shovel their opinions into my head for like 3 days straight now. And it's like, no, I'm rejecting your opinion and substituting my own.
There you go.
I
reject your opinion. Fuck off.
I reject. That's right. God damn you. But I think it's important. And, you know, I find it interesting because I always wonder if certain writers write in a certain way to attract a certain audience. And I'm really impressed because your book is really fluid, beautifully, and genderless, if that makes sense. It's like you read it and you don't know who wrote it, and that's kind of pretty magical too. So you don't put your, or the reader doesn't put a stereotype on what they're reading. Which I think people do that inherently. Oh, this person is this, therefore I already know what to expect out of their writing. And I think you've got a really beautiful way of just flowing in your material that is seamlessly universal.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're really good. sorry. So let me ask you. This book is phenomenal. I really like it. I think everybody needs to get a copy of it because I think they're going to like it too. Are you working on yet another book?
I am. I have started a second book. I have contracted a second book with Llewellyn. So that is my current endeavor. I'm super excited for anybody who likes the kind of more folklore history up. I think you're really going to like this second book. It's very... it delves a lot more into history and folklore.
Come
on. Awesome. So when is that going to come out?
kind of tentatively, like September-ish fall of 2021, which seems like a long time away, but I have a lot of work to do. So for me, it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
That's very soon and also feels very far away.
Yeah, I know, but it's really... Oh, I'm sorry, sis, go ahead.
No, I was going to interject with another question. Go ahead and finish this thought stream. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, things are moving so quickly. It's kind of scary, and things that I used to think were so far away are so much closer now than you could have imagined. So I'm really careful about making that statement. Well, maybe it's because I'm old. I don't know. But I keep feeling like time is constantly moving faster and I'm desperately trying to keep up with it. And some days it's harder than it used to be. But after Sis has a question, I have another question. Sis, you go first because you've been waiting. And then I'll ask my other question.
Okay. I was just going to ask how you guys are doing, how you and your family are doing. Are you guys shut down? How are you keeping yourself occupied?
Yeah. So my family largely lives out of state. I've got a brother and a sister-in-law that live out in California. My parents are kind of nomads. They live in an RV and travel around the U.S. So they're actually with my brother and sister-in-law right now, and they're doing really well. And then I have a sister who lives closer by, and she's doing well too. So we're all just kind of staying connected via like FaceTime, social media. I personally am just kind of hunkered down at home. My day job is still ongoing. I'm able to work from home.
Good.
So I feel really blessed. I feel really blessed in that sense. And for anybody who doesn't know, I'm a mental health therapist. It feels really good for me that I'm able to still connect with my clients, that I didn't have to be like, okay, bye, see you, whatever. So I'm able to still connect with them, which feels really good for me. And I hopefully feels really good for them too.
I was going to say, sure they need it right now.
Yeah,
it's
done
a lot of us
around COVID. So, but I'm doing well. I'm keeping busy by working and then also working on this next book. So, yeah.
Cool.
You're inordinately busy. Yeah. I mean, it must be interesting, you know, and I don't really, you know, our conversation tonight is really about the book and not your day job, but I was wondering if you would ever consider doing a book that incorporates your day job.
You know, I thought about it, especially lately. There seems like there's kind of a big boom in the kind of witchy, new age, occult, what have you. Publishing around the idea of like mental health, mindfulness, you know, general wellness and witchcraft and how those things intersect. I have thought about, you know, like if I were to write a book about that, what would it incorporate? You know, it is an area that I'm really passionate about. I feel like there is an intersection in my career of witchcraft and mental health where, in a way, I kind of fantasize in my head that I'm, like, the village witch and I'm, like, offering these, like, border, like, kind of folk charms as, like, ways of coping and dealing. Because I think that there's a lot to be said about mental health, mindfulness, coping skills, psychology, and how that plays into our ideas about how magic works. So I think maybe someday I might write a book that kind of bridges those two things. I think that would be interesting.
I do too.
Yeah.
I would buy that book. Definitely.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think there are elements that would be really helpful. You know, I didn't want to, like I said, I didn't want to push you too much on that topic tonight because we really wanted to talk about the book, which is awesome. But, yeah, that would be really cool. So we're, like, down to, like, 15 minutes. And I wanted to talk also, in addition to the book, you're going to be doing a workshop tomorrow.
I am.
Ooh.
I'm super excited.
Oh, my God. Can you tell everybody about it, when it is, where it is, and what they have to do to be a part of it?
So it is going to be over Zoom, and I can give you a link if you can, like, include that, like, in show notes or something like that.
Yeah, happy to.
So it's gonna be a class over Zoom. Hopefully that works. My computer's been having some technical difficulties, so it might start on Zoom and then transition over to my YouTube channel. We're gonna hopefully that'll go well. But one of the things that I really loved is because all of our, like, really awesome pagan events have been being canceled. I mean, events in general have been canceled. Here we were going to have PaganaCon a few weekends ago, our last weekend, actually. And I'm really bummed because I was going to get to hang out with so many other fabulous authors, and I was going to teach a class on folk magic, on the spells and charms used in traditional witchcraft. And so it's really cool seeing other people, like, kind of doing these online workshops. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do one. So it's going to be tomorrow. It's going to be, at 3 p.m. and that's Central Time.
And
it's a free workshop. So if you're interested in folk magic and, you know, different charms and spells, totally pop on by and check it out.
Cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, if you would be kind enough to send me that link, I will add it.
You got it.
Thank you so much. I apologize. I keep getting alerts about insanity. I'm what is considered, as you are, I'm sure, an essential worker. Like, your job is for the benefit of mankind, as it were. My job supports hospitals and police and all that stuff. And, you know, and you're a doctor, so there you go. Of sorts. My apologies. Anyway, but the fact of the matter is that I keep getting these updates because our state just went on complete shelter in place. It goes into effect on Monday night, but they just announced it this evening. So every 5 seconds, there's an update of, it's pretty interesting. I never considered myself an essential anything, except to my sister, because I'm essentially a pain in her ass.
You're essentially my love and my light.
I love you too. She is my everything. But anyway, it's weird to be considered important enough to be on the streets. And I'm like, you bitches don't want me on the streets. Have you lost your fucking mind? But okay. I guess we're doing this. But, yeah, so I apologize if you hear any kind of dinging in the background. That is Alert Central happening, which is hilarious. Never thought I'd be living through times like this. You know, my mentor used to teach me about the curse of may you live in interesting times. And, you know, when you say that to somebody, generally you think that you're leveling a curse that will mean something only to them.
Right.
But apparently we're all living in these interesting times. And I find it kind of fascinating. And I was wondering if you had any kind of insight impression you'd like to share about what we're all currently going through from a witchcraft perspective.
Well, I think from a witchcraft perspective, and I'm sure a lot of other people have already kind of chimed in with very similar impressions, is that we're really being challenged to look at the way we live our everyday life, to look at, you know, at the things that maybe we don't pay attention to, this is not to say that we shouldn't be feeling sad or feeling senses of grief or anxiety or anything like that, because I think everybody's experience right now is really valid and important. But I think you know, like for, you know, from my own perspective, like one of the things is I'm like, oh gosh, like I have only have so much paper towels. Like, and so I'm like, oh,
yeah,
like, well, what if I just use, what if I use reusable rags to clean my house? And I'm like, wow, like that's, why haven't I done that sooner? Like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, or also looking at the things we have, how much we consume, you know, specifically speaking to kind of the hoarding and the panic around like going and stocking up on things. And I really liked what you said in the beginning of the show about, you know, the people that are showing the positives of humanity and really helping each other out. Because I think right now it's really easy to tap into like the kind of way people are being shitheads. And,
yeah,
you know, it's just, people right now are, you know, showing all kinds of different true colors. And I do agree with what you said. I think from, even from kind of more of that therapy perspective, that people are letting their lizard brain out and allowing themselves to get sucked up into this survival mode, which makes sense. But I think we really need to work on self-soothing so that we don't do that. And that we do look out for each other versus just ourselves. But in the witchcraft sense, I think we're finding ways of evolving. And right now, I mean, and I bring this up a lot with my therapy clients, is that I think right now is the time of tapping into, especially like our artistic selves, finding ways of expressing these feelings we're having. And it's not about producing. I know a lot of people are feeling pressure right now, especially kind of comparing themselves socially to other people, that like, oh, you have all this time, you need to be doing all these things. But like doing things that feed your soul, doing things that, you know, if you are a witch or a magical practitioner, what are ways that you can be tapping into your magic to protect yourself, to protect loved ones, and to serve your community? I think part of being a witch is that community aspect of how can you work towards healing or protecting the world. So and that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be doing like these big grand rituals or anything like that. One of the things that I've done is just some candle magic around sending out healing energy to my community of keeping us safe, crafting different charms. Because I think witchcraft is ultimately about empowerment, and a lot of times that's about self-empowerment. But I think in times of crisis like this, we need to branch out and focus on, okay, we've empowered ourselves, that's great. Now how can we empower others? How can we, how can we kind of step into that village witch role? And that doesn't mean that you have to be going out to, like, you know, people or outing yourself or anything like that to your community, because I think there's a lot of very covert ways that you can be working your magic, which may be even the most magical of all. But so I think in terms of what we're feeling with COVID, it's just a matter of, you know, really facing challenges of how we're living our lives and how we interact with other people. I think it's bringing to light questions about our relationship with other people now that we are kind of forced to be out of contact in the physical realm. You know, how can we work to better, to experience those relationships more positively, checking in with people we care about and things like that. So I think it's a lot of challenges. I think about in terms of like the tarot, and you brought up too, Byron Ballard, who talked about the tower times, like, we are in this power moment where our world has been pulled out from underneath us. We're having to rebuild from the bottom up.
Yeah.
So
let's make sure that we build a better base this time.
Well,
absolutely.
My concern about it is that people are very, I find as Americans, our memories are very short. We're very forgiving of the wrong people. And we give short shrift to the right people all the time. And I think when push comes to shove, people don't remember some of the harder times they've had, some of the things they really do need to remember. Mm-hmm. I hope this isn't going to be that case. I really want this to be something that has been impressed upon people about the importance of community and
right.
the need to really look after each other, because, you know, you want to know that your neighbor is there for you. You don't have to be best friends, but you want to know that yeah. someone is going to care enough to be there.
Right.
I just think it's important.
I do too.
But anyway, all right, my love, we are almost out of time. We are down to 5 minutes. Is there anything else you would like to talk about before we go?
You know, not that I can think of off the top of my mind. I really enjoyed being on the show.
Well,
we
have so enjoyed
having
you.
Well, with that, we are going to say, please send us the link. I tried to attach it to the show page. I hopefully did it. I am going to double check again momentarily. But check out this book, The Crooked Path, An Introduction to Traditional Witchcraft by Keldon. And Keldon is generously giving a free workshop tomorrow on Zoom at 3 p.m. Central Time. Be there or be square. It's going to be cool. Folk magic, spells, and charms in traditional witchcraft. Keldon, thank
yeah.
you so much. You are so fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to your next book. And the next time you come on, we hope you'll come back.
Thank
yes,
you so
please.
Much.
Awesome.
It's been so
all
much
right,
fun. And stay safe.
Stay
thank
safe.
You. You too.
And we will talk
thank
to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Right,
oh, he's
girlfriend.
So adorable. All yeah. right, so I'm going to wrap it up. And I'm going to add a little caveat for our Christian friends and our witches who have Christian family and friends. Please, 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 I know it's Easter, but please stay home. It's not going to be safe by the time Easter rolls around. We're going to be dealing with the second wave. We all saw what happened in New Orleans for Mardi Gras. Please just take care of yourselves. We love you. We want you to be around, even if you don't love
listen
us.
To the orange shit gibbet. He's wrong about the timeline.
Yes.
He's
yes,
wrong
please.
About the timeline. Don't
He's
listen
wrong
to him,
about
please.
Everything.
Well... Yeah, mostly. Anyway,
yeah.
we love you. We will be back
yeah.
next week. I will be back with Talison for the monthly politics show. Be there, be square. Don't be square. Come see me. Anyway,
yeah.
we love y'all, and we will be back next week.
Have a good weekend. Bye, guys.
Bye,
stay
everybody.
Safe.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.